Genesis 41. It starts out, and I realize, man, Barry's been going over 30 minutes. And I was at a meeting one time, and the guy had been going for about 30 minutes, and he prayed. And then all of a sudden, when he got done praying, he's like, okay, well, here's the sermon. Give me 10 minutes. Genesis 41. It begins with these words. I think they're maybe significant. If we go to that, Keeter, thank you. One before that. There it is. When 2 full years had passed, I think we're supposed to be reading this ahead of time, and so I'm not going to read the entire chapter to you, but hopefully you remember what's been going on. When 2 full years had passed, I think that's significant. Joseph has been waiting a long time. Remember, he has this dream, and it's something great supposed to happen to him. He's supposed to be popular. He's supposed to be somebody. And he's been a slave. He's been a prisoner. And there's been better times and worse times. We don't hear a whole lot about the bad times, but I think in all those situations, it probably was pretty ugly starting out. Initially sold into slavery. He wasn't the head of Potiphar's house right away. He wasn't the person in the prison that the jailers put trust in right away. All that stuff took time. And last week's text was Joseph finally having a break where these two gentlemen have these dreams. And with the help of God, Joseph's able to tell them, well, for one of them, deadly news. And for another one, it was great news. Breaking news, wonderful news, and Joseph's words to him, this cupbearer, was, don't forget about me. I'm here unjustly. Help me be free. And you got to think that, help me, because there's something even more than this. I mean, surely his place of influence and popularity and being a somebody wasn't to be in the confines of a prison. That's not the vision that he had long before, where he told his father and he told his brothers about. There was this promise from God, something great. Surely it wasn't in a prison. And yet, 2 full years had to pass. I mean, I think this clock without hands represents something of maybe how Joseph felt. I mean, time's just standing there. Well, the interesting thing about chapter 41 is that it's kind of the beginning of the happily ever after part of the fairy tale, you know? We've had all these struggles before and easy points to point at of being able to talk about, but Joseph is now all of a sudden, we're going to see the story really turn and the tide turns and it becomes something wonderful. And it's that point that you start to hear the great music in the background in the movie, you know? And rather than the doom and gloom sounding of stuff, the emotion changes and the clouds lift and things start to get better, because here's the deal. And if you didn't read the text, here's my paraphrase for you. Yeah, Pharaoh has a couple dreams. And, you know, I ask this question. Who has dreams like this? I don't dream like this. I mean, cows eating cows and grain eating grain. My wife has dreams like this. I don't get it. I have dreams about the power went out at the campus house and the sump pump's not running and the building's flooding and I wake up in a panic. But that really could happen. Cows eating cows? Yet my wife shares dreams. Some of you have dreams like that and I don't quite get it. Where do those things come from? Well, we know a little bit maybe where this dream is coming from. And Pharaoh's disturbed. I mean, I'd be disturbed too if I had a dream like that, but he's disturbed, and anybody that he has on his staff or whatever they wanted to be called that he thought could help tell him what was going on couldn't tell him. And then the cupbearer is like, oh, hi, remember, I am a terrible person. There was this guy. He helped me. He can probably help you. And so, okay, Joseph's called to the scene. He comes in. He slaps the cupbearer in the head, and then he tells Pharaoh about the dream, not because Joseph's anything special on himself, but because he tells Pharaoh the deal. I can't tell you, but God can. And with the help of God, he's able to help Pharaoh realize that bad times are coming. There's going to be some good times for a while, but we ought to be prepared because bad times are coming. And it's not going to be just because cows are eating cows. Ain't going to be any cows. Not going to be any grain left unless we prepare. And so the reputation on some level maybe that Joseph had with others and just the presentation, I guess, and the character that maybe Pharaoh saw in Joseph, he puts him in power. And we read later in the chapter, verses 41 through 43. So Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I hereby put you in charge of the whole land of Egypt." Then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his finger and put it on Joseph's finger. He dressed him in robes of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. He had him ride in a chariot as his second in command, and men shouted before him, "Make way." Thus he put him in charge of the whole land of Egypt. Yay! You know, this is the good stuff. The dream starting to come true. So what? I mean, that's a great story, isn't it? And it makes great cartoons. I think the so what has to do with the previous years. And we felt like the clock was standing still. Because even though good things are happening now, and it seems like this dream and what God's plan for Joseph was is coming true, I don't know if it had to be. I don't know that it had to be. Because let's just say Joseph decides, well, when he is sold into slavery, maybe he does rise in influence in Potiphar's house, but we know the story there. And he stays in prison, but he rises influence there, but then he's forgotten about. I mean, the circumstances are there to tell God to take a leap, to tell God that he's done with it, to tell God he doesn't want to live for the dream anymore. He's tired of living for God. He'd rather just live for himself, because living for God has just left him as a slave and left him in prison. And his freedom is zapped, and his influence is zapped. I mean, what good is it? The circumstances were a great recipe to say, forget it. I think the challenge is pretty simple here. I use the story of Joseph all the time when talking with college students, because it's pretty regular that I have somebody come to my office and they want to talk one-on-one because their parent's been diagnosed with cancer. Their friend back home has committed suicide. And maybe now they're thinking about it themselves. Their parents all of a sudden contacted them and they're separating. Whatever. Circumstances. And maybe it's the first time they've had to deal with a really difficult, deep, emotional, hurting circumstance in their life. And it referred them to Joseph pretty regular because in the midst of all the terrible circumstances, he was obedient, right? As a slave, is he obedient first to God and to his fellow man? You know, Potiphar could have been a dirtbag. I don't know. I mean, I really don't really know. It's possible he was just a horrendous husband. There was definitely something not right there. I'm not sure where exactly it was, but for some reason Potiphar's wife's throwing herself at Joseph rather than at his husband. I don't know what's going on there, but there could have been real good reason in his own mind. Like, Potiphar's not taking care of anybody. But no, Joseph was obedient to God first, and as a result, obedient to his fellow man, faithful to his fellow man. In prison, the same thing happened. Even though circumstances were terrible, he persevered through all of that to be obedient to God and as a result being faithful to his fellow man. And you know what? The story of Joseph being shared with college students, I'm not any different. Circumstances affect me too, and y'all are probably the same. It's easy to say that God is my God and I live for him when things are going great, but when things aren't going very great, it's a little harder, isn't it? Circumstances tend to mess with our emotions, and then our doubts end up being escalated, and our fears end up being escalated. Through all of those circumstances, Joseph persevered. And it was a long time. For the most part, for us, our circumstances and our difficult circumstances are short. And then we can talk about persevering to other people and talk about persevering through sicknesses and persevering in our marriages and persevering with our family and our kids. And, you know, on Father's Day, maybe that was a good way to go. But why was Joseph faithful to his fellow man? It's because he persevered in being faithful to God first. And I think that as the story takes this shift, in the short amount of time that we have, that we have this gut check moment. Is our faith in God gauged by our circumstances? Or is it something that's beyond? Because the reality is that our circumstances are all temporary. It doesn't even matter if we have a life-threatening illness that we know that all the days on this earth, it's going to continue to eat away at us until we physically die. That is a temporary circumstance. It's easy for me to say because I'm not standing here that I know of dealing with one of those things, but I've watched it in my own family, and people persevere through illnesses and other difficulties like that that are just leading them to a physical death. But I've watched them cling to the cross of Jesus Christ through the whole thing and never give up hope that their life really is like that clock. There aren't any hands on it. It's their eternity clock. I learned about the eternity clock at the campus house. Charlie used to have one hanging in the office. That those who are citizens of the kingdom are living for eternity, and even though certain circumstances at the moment in this life are difficult, what is to come, you can't measure, and you can't measure the goodness. And we get this promise in Revelation. Let me flip to Revelation 21. Because here's the good news. It says, "Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no longer any sea. I saw a holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride beautifully dressed for her husband. And then I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, 'Now the dwelling of God is with men, and he will live with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away.' He who was seated on the throne said, 'I am making everything new.' And then he said, 'Write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true.' He said to me, 'It is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To him who is thirsty, I will give to drink without cost from the spring of the water of life. He who overcomes will inherit all this, and I will be his God, and he will be my son.'" He who overcomes, he who perseveres, there will be no more crying, no more pain, no more death, no more weeping. It will be goodness from that point forward. Boy, we can lose sight of that. I can lose sight of that, and I just think I'm probably no different than the rest of us. We can lose sight of the fact that we really do live for eternity if we are committed to Jesus Christ. Because we know John 3:16, whoever believes in him, who commits to him, will not perish but have everlasting life. But we do have a part. Just like Joseph had a part, I believe, in being obedient to God for the dream to be fulfilled, for that commitment to be fulfilled, for Joseph to not reject him, we have a part as well to be committed to Jesus Christ from this day forward. And no matter what the circumstances are that we face between now and our physical death on this earth, we live for eternity. I think sometimes we forget that. And so today, I think that's what we need to recommit ourselves to, or maybe commit yourself to for the first time. And so for our focus, for our invitation time, it's simply that. Has circumstances recently been making you really kind of start to give up on God and not depend upon him? Whether it's family strife, it's physical illness. those things will have a time, and all of us will have a time with difficult circumstances. I think we've been promised that in the Bible too. This life isn't going to be peaches once you commit your life to Jesus. Likely, it's going to get more difficult because the world's going to hate you. However, it's only for a time, just like it was only for a time for Joseph. And we get to see how the rest of his story unfolds as we go on. But for today, where's your commitment? That's maybe the question to ask. Maybe you just need to renew that commitment today because there's been circumstances that have made you run the other direction and want to give up on God. And you maybe need to come here and be counseled and pray with somebody over that. And maybe it's because you've never made that commitment before. And the songs are nice here, and you know there's air conditioning, and the coffee's hot on Sunday morning, and maybe that's been the extent. That's going to end someday too, what it looks like here. So where's your commitment? Do you live for something more than what is the day-to-day or what's right before your nose? If not, hey, come talk to somebody. You don't have to talk to me, but talk to somebody who knows that and gets that and have them help you